Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back. Happy Thursday. We got some stuff to talk about, man. But first, more importantly, happy 200th episode, buddy.
200 episodes of the Dune Minute, including our summer schools and our Dune Prophecy, Dune Part 1.
Yeah, we did it. 200 pieces of shit episodes of this of this bad podcast.
And somehow people, a lot of people, actually, still listen to this.
Oh, man. Well, this is a monumentous occasion. And insert party noises here. Okay, that was our party.
Back to work.
Back to work. That's enough celebration.
No, 200 episodes is fucking wild, actually.
Yeah. Like, I was looking over the release schedule, and it came up, and I was like, oh,
look at that.
200. So if you've listened for all 200, thank you. Thank you for sticking around. If you're new to us,
you've listened to all 200. Why?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you, but why?
We appreciate it, but also, like, what the fuck?
Are you okay? Should we call someone? No, we sincerely appreciate it. And I am just, I've had just a blast doing this so far.
Yeah.
We got about 500 more, I think, to go. Feels like that anyways.
I've got some fun statistics, at least, about the Dune Minute. If you had to guess how much the United States being our largest audience, what percentage of that audience is U.S.?
What percentage of the full, like our full listening audience?
Of our full listening audience is in the U.S.
60%.
Nope, 73.
73, okay.
Our next highest are our friends in the U.K.
Okay, cool.
And then our Canadian friends up north. After that, the Finns.
The Finns?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then Japan, South Korea, Ukraine, Taiwan, Australia, Mexico, Denmark, and then other.
Other? Well, yeah. I would like to visit other one day.
It's a fun country, I've heard.
Where, you know, I feel like they've all got names.
Yep.
Like, we found them. We found them all.
Yep.
And once we find it, humans are pretty good about giving it a name.
Pretty good.
We're pretty good. So just to relegate them to other seems a little disrespectful.
Well,
I know it's not you. Thank you, hosting platform, for that. But the wonderful country of other.
Beautiful country.
Yes. Good, they have good soups there. It's a good cold soup from
from other. As far as our listener platforms are concerned, you want to guess how much of our platform base listens on mobile devices?
99%.
91.
Okay.
I'm looking at these metrics over the last 6 months.
Okay, gotcha.
5.8% listen on a computer.
Okay.
2.2% listen on a smart speaker.
Interesting.
And
Alexa, play Dune Minute Podcast. Oh, shit, you're a Siri house. I hope somewhere someone's Alexa just went off.
Well, it'd be really weird because they're already listening to the Dune Minute Podcast, so...
We'll start playing another episode.
Oh, okay. But my favorite statistic here is 0.05% of our audience listens to the Dune Minute on a smart TV.
Okay.
Of mobile devices, iPhone listeners fucking love podcasts.
Well, yeah.
67.7% of our audience listens on an iPhone.
Didn't Tim Apple invent podcasts?
Tim Apple himself. 14.5% listens on an Android phone. 9.2 on other mobile devices, 3.14.
Android smartwatch.
Nope. Windows computer.
Okay. Yeah.
2.68 on an Apple computer, which I thought that was pretty low for that. But I mean,
yeah.
Imagine people mostly listen to podcasts while they're like at the gym or whatever.
Right.
2.26 on an Amazon smart speaker and 0.49 in the mysterious country of other.
Ah, the country of others, most famous export, other devices.
So yeah, that's some Dune Minute statistics for you.
All right. Well, however you listen, however you consume our dumb voices, we appreciate it.
Once again, why? Secondly, thank you.
Yeah. All right, man. That's enough celebrating. Let's get into this minute because we got some stuff to talk about.
Dude. All right.
So we are talking about minute 38 through 39 of Dune Part 2. This minute starts and ends with Paul just doing the most, man. Sometimes it's like, it's too much. Like Chani's been out here her whole life. Maybe you should like trust her.
to know what she's doing. How else is he going to like really impress her and like, you know, let her know that he's the one, man?
I don't know. Okay. We'll get to that. So the minute opens up, Paul's still running. Yep. He makes contact with the goons, and they do some quick movie fighting.
We're in a 2v1 Paul v. Goon.
Paul, yeah, exactly. Some movie fight scenes take place, and he takes them out. He takes one of them out.
Let's not, you know, sweep over it too quickly.
All right.
He hits the first one with a pretty solid leg sweep.
Yes, he does.
But then... during his attempt at the killing blow, gets interrupted by goon number two, at which point the leg-swept goon hits Paul square in the chest with a fucking kick. And, oh, that Foley team. Whoever just, like, punched the shit out of that pile of leather or whatever.
Yeah.
Good job on this one. It was just the perfect, like, kick sound. Just
yeah.
That nice, meaty thud. Beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, Paul's knocked onto his back, and then, you know, Harkonnen goon number two, the one that's still standing, is kind of, you know, trying to wail down on him as Harkonnen goon number one in his limited mobility suit is like...
he's turtling.
He's turtling his way back up to his... to walking. Yeah. At which point, Paul finds an opening, cuts the Achilles of goon number two, and quickly, you know, finishes him off.
Yeah.
At this point, Paul, you know, sees that goon number one is too close to Chani for Paul to catch up, and he stumbles over the body, and
the goon number one is walking casually over to Chani.
Sure. Limited mobility.
Yeah.
Maybe they can't run. They don't run so good.
But Paul was running.
Well, Paul tries to run.
Yeah.
Stumbles over the body of the guy that he just killed. And just realizes he can't do anything. So he just calls out to Chani, at which point she turns around with this loaded rocket, looks at the goon for about half a second, and then just fucking launches the rocket straight into his chest.
Yeah.
Which hits him and then project, you know, fucking forces him into the treads of the harvester, at which point the rocket explodes.
Yeah.
Really solid action scene, if you ask me.
Gosh, it was great. Now, I am almost certain that you went through this frame by frame as well.
I did.
Okay. as did I. I was looking for a wire.
I
couldn't see one.
Also so, was.
So good job on the team for erasing all the wires. I did not see anything.
Yep.
And just the amount of detail that went into this frame by frame is so good.
Mm-hmm.
You see the exhaust come out of the back of the bazooka. You see something that I thought was really good. The like gas escaping from the muzzle of the bazooka. And you see the projectile leave before you see the gas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it is such for like a, such a quick sequence. There is a ton of detail that go into this. But that goon, yeah, he takes it square to the chest and is just...
He takes it square to the chest. There's a thud sound. And then you see him just get fucking launched.
They did a clever CG trick here where the camera does not just cut over to the treads. It does like a tracking, like trying to follow the guy. It does
a blurry follow.
Yeah. Yep. But this is really clever for hiding, like motion.
Yep.
So they obviously were not going to, you know, throw this guy up, 150 feet or however tall it is up to those treads. So you just get the initial like, jerk backwards from the cable.
Yep.
From
this guy. You fucking have him go into like a big, you know, foam wall piece or whatever.
As soon as he's off as soon as he's out of frame from the camera, but then the camera is still trying to track him, just cuts up to what I'm assuming is all CG.
Yeah.
And where we see the explosion. So really, really cool stuff. I loved it. Great explosion too.
Yep. Solid explosion CG. And, you know, after that, Chani calls for a reload. Because their position's given away at this point. And in the background, we see the ornithopter flying around, almost like a shark circling its prey.
Yeah, yeah.
After reloading, she takes aim again into the skies.
So it comes into view. Chani raises her sights up to the to get a lock. And she's moving kind of slowly right now.
Yeah.
And I believe this is for dramatic effect. But when she fires, hold this moment in your mind because there's some inconsistencies that I'll talk about tomorrow.
Okay.
She fires and nothing happens. It just like bounces off the shields.
But it doesn't.
What?
I have in my frame by frame.
Okay.
I made an observation. It hits the shield.
Okay.
And then a laser gun just shoots the rocket?
Is that what happens?
A laser gun shoots the rocket, which...
Okay.
Fucking risky as shit.
Yeah.
Because, as we've talked about many times, when a laser gun meets the Holtzman shield generator... Bad things happen.
Yeah, atomic blast.
But or what I would assume is a laser gun, because I went through frame by frame, there is that same distinct laser gun laser that we saw minutes before.
Yeah.
Also being used to detonate the rocket outside of the shield.
Interesting. I did not see it that way. I believe you, but I just thought it just bounced off the shield because it was like a glancing blow.
Nope, it's destroyed with a laser gun.
Okay.
Which puts this whole thing into a way different perspective.
Yeah.
Because what the fuck?
Okay, so let's think about this for a second then. The laser gun shield interaction.
Yep.
That has never been talked about in the movies. I don't believe it has.
Not in the movies.
So are we to believe that that is not movie canon?
I don't know, because the laser gun would have penetrated the rocket, inherently hitting the shield.
Yeah.
Which, had it followed book and Dune Encyclopedia canon, I'm pretty sure book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Book and encyclopedia canon would have caused a fucking nuclear detonation.
Yep. So I guess that's not a thing in the movies.
Guess not.
Disappointing.
Either that or maybe it's just a weird trick of light.
Yeah, maybe.
Because there seems to be a light source behind the ornithopter. But... Hmm. When I went through frame by frame, there was a very distinct, very thin laser beam.
Yeah.
That we saw in this sequence.
Well, okay. Well, I guess we just keep that in mind going forward.
In fact, hold on.
You going to pull it up on the computer?
I'm going to pull it up.
Okay.
So we just watched it back to make sure I'm not fucking insane.
I mean,
frame by frame.
You're not fucking insane about this.
You can very clearly see the distinct line of a laser gun.
Yeah, and we noted that it does interact with the shield. So the projectile has hit the shield.
Yep.
And then a laser gun picks it off as it's presumably burrowing into the shield.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Don't love that. But we have not gotten... Well, they're not being inconsistent, because that aspect of the universe has never been touched on
in the movies. And we talked about this with the thing with Stilgar and Jessica, where Jessica started to shed a tear for the dead, and Stilgar was like, don't shed tears.
Yeah.
But in the book, you know, there's the whole, I was a friend of Jameis, Paul mm-hmm, was mm-hmm. crying thing.
Yeah.
So seemingly the movie has its own rules and its own canon. And because there was no pre-established interaction between Lays Guns and Holtzman Fields, I can accept it. Do I like it? No. But I'm also watching this movie frame by frame like a fucking maniac.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just a thing that isn't seen by people unless they're going through looking at it directly.
Well, I mean, it was up there for 3 frames.
More than 3.
Okay.
Because you see it kind of start in from the top of the mm-hmm. frame as a whole and work its way down towards the ornithopter.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a blink and you miss it for sure moment.
Yeah.
But I think it would be visible as you're watching.
Yep.
Yeah, that's okay. So that is a movie. That's just a movie invention.
Now, in fairness, the sun is also behind the ornithopter,
mm-hmm.
and the camera is looking directly at both.
Yeah. So the shield activation that I mentioned could be a glare.
Yep.
So I guess it is.
We also don't know if the laser hits the shield. We don't see an explosion of the rocket either. No. After going back and watching it again, it just
disappears at that yeah. point. So this could be a laser originating from the harvester.
Possibly.
That it just intercepted the rocket before it got to the shield. Because from this camera angle, it's really hard to judge distances.
And it looks like it's shooting
down.
Downward, but not at a super steep angle. So
I would say it's pretty steep, because the ornithopter is pretty low. Definitely,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Below the top of the harvester at this point. So it could be some kind of defensive stuff on top of the harvester shooting down to
get the... I don't think it would be out of the question for a laser gun to necessarily exist on top of these harvesters either. So
no. I was going to say this earlier in the week, but the fact that they're using laser guns out here was almost surprising to me, because of the shield interaction stuff.
Yep.
But if you think about, the Fremen don't use shields in the open desert because of the attraction to the worm. So using a laser gun now becomes okay again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, having them some kind of defensive or offensive capabilities built into the harvesters makes sense.
Earlier this week, we talked about Dune Part 1. In Dune Part 1, we see that the harvesters have offensive and defensive capabilities because they shoot off missile barrages.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not out of movie canon for Harkonnen harvesters to have weapons on them either. So
yeah, what a good shot that was, though, to pick off a rocket propelled
tiny little missile from a RPG.
Yeah, they have really good tracking systems on the laser guns.
Evidently so. Okay. But yeah, just the fact that there's a laser gun that's being shot at a ornithopter with a Holtzman shield on it is like, that set off a million fucking red alarms in my head. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, I guess that is not part of the movie canon.
unless we hear otherwise in the future, but I don't know where we would.
Yeah. I don't know either.
Yeah.
But moving on throughout the minute, because we just got a little bit left in this one. Chani once again shouts reload as the Ornithopter drops its shields and starts to fire upon them. Paul dives on top of Chani, and they're both miraculously unhit.
Paul is once again doing the most.
Well, he did a good thing here. That's fine.
Yeah.
He just really just shared his plot armor with Chani. Can't kill him. So it's like, it's like those cartoons where a gun's being shot and just like it shoots the outline of the person.
Yep. Yep.
That's what happens with this, this blast.
Some Looney Tunes ass shit for sure.
Yeah, exactly. The metal leg starts to rise up and they need to move with it to maintain their cover. And they almost lose their cover. Like it's so very close. And I like the perspective from the door gunner. Just waiting to see a glimpse of them before it fires again. That was really cool.
Conveniently off camera. Also, Paul also remembers to grab the bag with all their ammunition.
Yeah. Right. and it's at this point where Paul mansplains to Chani that the shield will only work.
The shield will only open when it fires.
Yeah.
And Chani's like, you dumbass. I know that. What do you think I'm trying to do?
God. Goodness gracious, Paul. Sweet baby Paul. She's been out here, man. She's not as green as you are.
Unfortunately, unlike last minute, this minute gets cut off mid-sentence. Because Paul then goes to say, I'll trigger it on my...
Yep. And that is where we end. Anything from Martin Soul on this one?
I have only a couple things.
Okay.
So... We talked earlier in the week about how all the interior Ornithopter shots were done in a Black Hawk piloted by the Jordanian military.
Mm-hmm.
However, we also talked about how these scenes were shot in Abu Dhabi, which is notably not in Jordan. So what's Chani aiming at? Just a drone.
Just a drone?
Yeah, just a drone.
Oh, so that's where the drones come in.
Yep.
Okay.
A drone was used in place of the Ornithopter, and if winds exceeded 20 miles an hour, drones, wire cams, and all the shadow panels had to be lowered to ensure the safety of cast and crew. Art and Soul also then goes on to talk about additional safety measures, including worries about heat stroke because it was 100 plus degrees every day. You had actors in still suits and actors in the Harkonnen big... you know, bulky suits mm-hmm. with their domed face shields and everything.
Yeah.
But then also just the crew as a whole talking about needing to constantly supply sunscreen and fluids and electrolytes.
Oh,
and
my God. I bet they just had vats of sunscreen.
You know, we talked about 38 million deciliters of water.
Yeah, seriously.
How many deciliters of sunscreen were used
God almighty.
For the creation of Dune Part 2?
You know, our pale asses would have been burnt to a crisp out there.
Bro. Like, I was at a wedding over the weekend, and it was outside for maybe 30 minutes, and I could, like, already start to feel my skin, like... tingling in the sun, and I was like, oh god, no, I can't. So yeah, drop me in the desert in Abu Dhabi and my ass is dead 100%. But yeah, how many gallons of sunscreen, how many gallons of Gatorade and other electrolytes? Jeez, and stuff.
I'm sure a lot.
Yeah, but that's all that I have for Art and Soul.
Okay.
For the week, actually. So
all right, cool. Well, I think we'll still have a lot to talk about tomorrow.
The action continues.
Yes, it does.
The Dune Minute Podcast. You can find us online on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com. You can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. If you are also just as confused about using laser guns in the proximity of Holtzman shield generators, let me know, because I feel like that's one of the biggest no-nos you can do here in Dune. But yeah, we will be back tomorrow to wrap this week up. We'll see you later.
See ya.